This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Oh, I won't touch it then. Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
There's a smooth start, Kevin.
Right.
It is City Limits. It is Wednesday. And you are with Kevin and Anne on 3CR.
You are. And Kevin's going to reach into his bag and get all his books out.
We're having a very casual start to the show.
We are.
But we do have tea. I can see on the other side of the panel there.
Yes, it's Chinese white tea today, which is regarded as the most healthy of teas.
It's about time I walked out of here more healthy than when I came in.
Well, yes, you do. I think. Well, I hope you do anyway. Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners will walk out more healthy after an hour of us.
Well, yeah.
Dear listener.
Maybe. But anyway, that's Anne Maxwell over there. Of course, I'm Kevin Healy. It is City Limits. It's the second Wednesday of the month. Today we do energy issues. And we're going to talk to Julia Stockard. I think it's going to be Julia at the... from the Save Western Port Group, and we're going to talk to her about the latest developments down there, because it's one of those stories where there's good, but there's bad to get to good, so to speak, because there's plans for offshore wind, which is a good idea, and we support that in terms of renewables. But to get there, they're planning to do things at Hastings, which has fought other issues before this. They had a few years ago, which they actually won, stopping a development. But which we know, Western Port's a pristine and pretty fragile environment around there. But they plan to use Hastings as the storage point and construction site, so to speak, for this development. So on one hand, you're getting renewable energy. On the other, you could be causing massive damage to a pristine environment. So that has to be sorted out. And there's an EES now going to take place. But, of course, they also cost the community time and money. They've already had one big fight where it cost them a hell of a lot, and now they've got to go and do it again. And, the community's getting pretty exhausted over the whole thing. But we'll talk to Julia about
that.
Goes
on and on.
Yeah, goes on and on. We were hoping today to have Raylene Cooper from the Save Our Songlines group. This is extending City Limits a fair bit. But she's over in... where Woodside is going to destroy the rock art in Western Australia, and she's looking at legal plans to stop it, legal possibilities of stopping it, which hope is probably the last hope for them. And but of course, I forgot when I tried to tee up an interview that it's actually with Saylight Savings where she lives. It's now 6 o'clock in the morning, or 6:04, looking at our clock. And I don't think she was all that anxious. I didn't speak to her personally, but I don't think she was all that anxious to come on at six. So we are going to do a pre-recorded interview with Raylene, and we'll play that on the fourth Wednesday in 2 weeks' time. So
be great to hear
we'll
that.
Catch up with that. Yeah. Now a cup of tea.
Yes, that's what I've been waiting for.
As I say, it's
been brewing as we speak.
Yes, it's white tea, and it's ostensibly healthy. Now, whether it is or not, anyway, that's...
I believe it.
Now, today you've got... What have we got today? We've got Don't Be a Mug, Join the Union Today as one cup. And the other one says something about morale...
Defeat the US invaders.
Where's my glasses? Anyway, you get that one.
I've got no choice.
Yeah, that's it.
I get the one with more writing on it. Yeah. Oh, it's quite a dark tea. I was expecting it to be...
I may have put too much white tea in the thing I bring it in. It's probably just too strong.
This is going to wake me up.
Yeah, that's... Well, it'll certainly do that. I'm trying to think where I put my reading glasses.
Oh, that's a necessity of technology.
Yes,
you can borrow mine, Kevin.
Possibly.
Do you want to borrow mine? I don't know if you're probably more blind than I am.
I may well have left them at home, I think. That's
the all right. Well, take mine and I'll see if I can get another
pair. We'll stagger through. I'm pretty much up with
I think I can see the panel without mine.
Yeah, that's good. Don't worry. We'll be right.
I might press the wrong button.
They're sitting up there. They're under the bloody thing. They're all the time.
There you go.
God, I'm stupid. I'm a total idiot, really. Now, this is one where you did say you have a few areas of specialty.
I did, didn't I?
Well, one of them is this, not avoiding tax, but in fact, you'll be pleased to know that last week when Optus was in real trouble, and it still is, of course, showing that it while it's a telecommunications company, in fact, a lot of its time it spends not telecommunicating, so it can be also called a non-telecommunications company. But also it's one of the many huge corporations that in the last year or so paid how much tax, do you think?
Oh, not a very lot, not a lot. Maybe one of the ones that paid no tax.
None whatever, not a cent. They're quite happy to take corporate welfare, of course, from the taxes other people pay, but they don't take any themselves. Netflix is another.
I want their accountant.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they all tell us I'm sure they do. They all tell us they meet their legal tax obligations.
Of course, they do.
So there's nothing illegal about any of this. Netflix is another big company, but the tax office boasted that things are improving. They said because last year it was. Where are the figures here somewhere in this story? The last year there were 1,300 and something companies that didn't... 1,253 companies the previous year paid no tax.
This
is the number of big businesses that paid no tax. 1,253 the previous year, but the tax department was whooping it up because this year it was only 1,136 and it dropped. Isn't that wonderful? Now, I'm prepared to say I'll start whooping it up when that figure is zero.
That's the zero. That's where we want to see the zero, not in the tax payments.
That's exactly right. But anyway, they're all paying naught. Naught. Isn't that wonderful? Now, also another one of the great companies that, in fact, advises people about their tax obligations, as he has another sip of tea, is Deloitte, one of the big companies, one of the big consultancy companies. Now, they did a report for which they were paid trillions of dollars for the Department of Employment and Workplace Relations.
Oh, really?
And it seems that they used AI to do help with a lot of the report.
Cut and paste.
Yeah, that's right. And a bloke called Chris Rudge, Dr. Chris Rudge, an academic, he went through the report that they produced for the government and discovered that most of it was absolute crap, to put it as kindly as
possible.
Are they
assuming no one's going to read these things?
One assumes so. For instance, some examples. These are just the selected examples.
Oh, yes, give us some examples.
Liz Burton Crawford, The Rule of Law and Administration, Justice in the Welfare State, a study of Centrelink, Federation Press 2021, various pages. The note is 10 references deleted, publication doesn't exist.
Ooh.
Liz Burton Crawford, The Rule of Law and Administration Discretion, Federation Press 2021, page 112 to 115, 2 references deleted, publication doesn't exist.
They're referencing non-existent documents.
Notably, Her Honour Justice Davis stated at 25:26, the burden rests on the decision maker to be satisfied on the evidence that the debt is owed. A person's statutory entitlements cannot lawfully be reduced based on an assumption unsupported by evidence. No such quote exists, and the ruling does not have those paragraph numbers. It is Justice Davies, not Justice Davis. Bjorn Regnell et al., Exploratory Case Study on Release Planning in a Market-Driven Software Company, 2001, Journal of Systems and Software, 66-137-39-40.
Sounds impressive, Kevin.
2 references deleted, publication doesn't exist, etc.
Oh.
So, Now they say they'll pay back therefore a bit of the bit of the money they got, but a number of key people, including Chris Rudge, the professor who exposed this, say, well, they should pay the lot back.
Absolutely, they
and
should.
In fact, Labor Senator Deborah O'Neill says the Albanese government should demand a full refund for the cost. It was a $440,000 they were paid for the report,
mm-hmm.
But they wanted to pay back a small percentage of that on the basis of these
for the references
minor problems in the whole thing, which was about people being cut off the dollars.
Speaking
of which, don't be watching it, but the last 2 weeks, tonight, I don't know if it's the third part of the last part or the second last part or what, but have you been watching the SBS special on the doll thing?
I certainly have.
Yeah, it's been terrific, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would recommend it as something to watch if people are interested in that issue, because they use reenactments, which sometimes can be really daggy, but these are really draw you into the emotional aspect, and it's the emotional dimension that often doesn't get reported.
No, it's the third part tonight, and if people have been watching it or haven't, I recommend people watch it. It's a very good series, I'm not sure whether tonight's the last part or not. I don't know how many parts.
It's a great production.
But on such matters, Suss and Ley, the opposition leader, Suss and was put the S in, of course, as we know, because she believes in some witchcraft or something.
Mm-hmm.
Told her to be
numerology.
Numerology. That's it. Told her she'd be lucky if she put the S in. What the S stand for, who knows? But anyway, Suss.
I don't want another N in my name. I want to be N.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I could be Kev.
You could be Kev.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, Suss, of course, made a speech where she said that we're spending too much on welfare and we have to work it out, and we need much more.
They want to see zero welfare. Talk about zeros. Yeah. They want to see zero welfare. Yeah, that's their aim.
Yeah, she says too many people are getting it. We're wasting a lot of money. She government has to cut back on spending. She doesn't say where, but I don't think she thinks corporate welfare is a waste of money.
It's an investment.
All the
Kevin.
Subsidies to the mining industry.
You should know that.
No, I'm sorry about that, Dan. I'll obviously upset you. I can see all that looking at you. Yeah, I'm sorry. Upset you with that one.
Get it right.
Yeah, she said it's unrealistic to keep expecting the government will provide for every need and solve every problem by spending more. This mindset, supercharged in recent years, weakens both our finances and our national character. So, you have much greater character if you're starving in the gutter with nothing.
There you go.
There you are.
Yeah.
So, Sussan's got it all sorted out. But
grow a spine. Is she one of these people that drives past and winds down a window and yells, "Get a job"?
I'm sure she does. Yeah, that's right. Because she's got one, of course. No doubt about it. On the robo debts,
get a job at Deloitte. Then you don't have to do a whole lot.
No, you just got to press a button and hope something comes up. But anyway, and I charged $440,000 for it.
That's right.
On robo debt. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that the corruption authority set up by the government under the previous Attorney General. Looked at this, and there were the inquiry into robo debt recommended six people. We don't know who they are,
secret list.
That's right. There were certainly some public servants and a couple of ministers. I think we can guess who they are, but nonetheless, made a recommendation, and the Judge Breton, who is head of this authority, this corruption authority, anti-corruption authority. Ruled there was no case to answer and there'd be no prosecutions. Now, subsequently, there's been such a backlash that they're now looking at it, and they may at some point in the future, a bit like Breton did the inquiry into the Afghanistan killings over there as well. And and again, we haven't seen anyone charged over the war crimes that that were exposed there. And so far, no one's been charged over robo-debt, despite the terrible human cost that we're seeing in this series. But mm-hmm. we knew anyway, but we're mm-hmm. seeing it depicted on the screen. It's quite amazing, isn't it? But then it turned out that also one of the people who may well be one of the six names is a close friend of the judge, of course. but they pointed out that there was no impact on the whole thing, and we believe that, don't we?
No. The Corruption Commission wouldn't be corrupt, would it, Kevin?
Oh, well, it probably wouldn't be, but I think there's other things about it, aren't there? I don't know who's the only charge that's been laid was against a public servant who got a job for her future son-in-law or whatever. It was one of those cases where, you know, it's minor as schemes go, and particularly as corruption goes.
They get the
but all the
fry.
Real corruption going mm-hmm. on in the world, no one's been charged with anything. Mm. It's wonderful, isn't it? Anyway, this will upset you a lot, though, because the Productivity Commission has recommended this 5% tax on cash flow above certain levels for the big, big companies that don't pay any tax in the first place. So it's interesting that you're actually recommending a tax on those who don't pay it. But anyway, that aside, the Business Council says that the push to introduce this cash flow tax, which is recommended by the Productivity Commission, itself a neoliberal
body.
Yeah, neoliberal
one of my
body.
Favourite
That's right. Yeah,
departments
well,
there.
The Business Council says the Productivity Commission's push to introduce a cash flow tax on Australia's biggest companies could shrink the economy by 0.5% per every year and would risk consumers paying more for groceries, fuel and daily essentials. So it's quite serious, isn't it? And also, of course, it would stop these people investing, and I think they feel they can't pay tax and invest. It's one or the other.
You know, if you want to shrink the economy, I've heard you keep mass employment going. You keep a level of mass employment is always a good way to shrink your economy.
Well, that seems to be the what the Reserve Bank feels. You know, that there's not enough unemployed, and that's why you have to do some of that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I can see the Business Council jumping up and down about that one.
Yeah, and because it's Energy Day, Murray Watt, I mentioned last week on the program, I'm going to top up my tea here. Is your tea
It's
going?
A really nice tea. I'm quite happy with what I've got.
Okay. Murray Watt, as we said last week, he actually diluted the terms, the conditions to appease Woodside, and
the heavy negotiator.
Any
that he
development
is.
There, I think, is going to cause, particularly 40 years of it, for God's sake, to 2070 or whatever it is. But another sip of tea. But any development there is going to damage and destroy, I suspect, the rock art. But he actually said that he took into account, he conceded. He said, I find there is a likely risk of serious and irreversible damage to the petroglyphs as a result of emissions from the proposed action. I also find that there is uncertainty about that damage. So he admits it's going to cause damage. Then he says, I believe the approval has struck the right balance between Aboriginal heritage protection and economic factors. Ooh. Now, which of those? I'll give you a bit of a question here, Anne. That is a difficult one. But
okay.
Aboriginal heritage protection and economic factors, which one do you think got the most weight in terms of this? Now, it's a tough one.
Well, rock's pretty heavy, you know, Kevin. I can see it tilting the scales.
Right.
Economic factors, those sort of, you know, what is it? Airy-fairy economic factors. What does that even mean?
Now, in one burst, he says, and this is the bit we all talk to Raylene Cooper when we actually get her on the show about this, but he says, I find there is a likely risk of serious and irreversible damage to the petroglyphs, and then says the right balance between heritage protection and economic factors. Now, irreversible damage and heritage protection, seem to me not to go exactly hand in hand. Mm.
They seem to be non-negotiables
hand
to me.
Hand in glove.
Mm.
Yes, yeah. I would have thought it's one or the other.
I think your economic factors are going to be pretty ephemeral and your irreversible damage is going to be irreversible.
Yes.
Yes. That's one of my wise words for the day, Kevin. Yes.
Well, when you put it that way, I think you're right. And, of course, I think I mentioned this a week or two ago, but again, it's worth repeating. The Vanuatu climate change minister, his name's Ralph Regan-Vanu, in fact I did tell him this a couple of weeks ago, but he said the approval would put Australia in breach of that July ruling by the International Court of Justice that countries could be held liable for the emissions they produce.
Mm-hmm.
And the advisory opinion of the ICJ made it clear that going down the fossil fuel production expansion is an internationally wrongful act.
Mm. Yeah, the world is watching.
Yeah. And in fact, there was an article in the Age a week or so ago by a young woman who had, in fact, taken the government to court as saying it had a responsibility to young people. Mm. But she wrote an article where she really is scathing, mm-hmm. and makes the point very clearly that you can't have it both ways. You can't say you're doing something for the environment, and that the target they've now set is inadequate anyway, and it looks worse when you put it alongside the approval for the Woodside thing, which everyone knows about anyway, of course. But she said, in fact, the opposition then, she talks about how nothing was happening at all. You know, she said, I was 14 when I first got involved.
Mm-hmm.
The government, the opposition then, the government of today was much, but the enemy then was the old guard, the coalition, which had infamously joked about the threat Pacific Island nations face from rising sea levels, the party that had considered abandoning Australia's renewable energy target. The opposition then, the government of today, was much more welcoming. A few marched with us, a few met us, a few gave us the support of their officers and told us they wholeheartedly supported our cause. Naturally, when it was this Labor government that rode into power on promises of climate action in 2020, we celebrated. The student movement and the climate movement readied ourselves to work alongside the new guard in bringing in crucial climate policy and delivering a future we could feel confident about rather than one defined by smoke-filled skies, flooded homes and broken promises. But any narrative of walking hand in hand has been slowly crushed over the past 3 years, and any remnant of hope has been absolutely destroyed over the past week, and then on she goes.
But what an experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's that. At the same time, Donald Trump has announced he's opening up new coal mines all over America.
Mm.
Yes, because he knows that climate change is crap,
right?
As Tony Abbott does as well. U.S. officials are set to hold the government's biggest coal sales in more than a decade, offering more than 500 million tons from publicly owned reserves next to strip mines in Montana and Wyoming. And on it goes, massive developments. And of course, here in Australia, the same thing's happening. And we've mentioned AI a number of times, the amount of energy it uses and the amount of water. Mm-hmm. They keep talking about the energy, they don't mention the water bit, which is quite serious.
Mm-hmm.
But even government bodies now, the Climate Change Authority has said, well, AI threatens the emission cuts that we've already announced because renewables won't be able to meet the massive amount of energy they're going to require.
Mm.
And also there's a separate article saying they're going to need more coal, absolutely, because they have to work 24 hours a day, and if renewables, they can't be relied upon overnight, and so you're going to need more coal power. And so it's more, and the Queensland government, in fact, has reneged on the previous government's commitment to close coal mines by 2030 for something or other, which is still far too far anyway, and says we expect coal will still be powering us for decades. I mean, it's...
Yeah, talk about when, it. One step forward, two steps back.
When we have to be getting up and getting off it altogether, and things are looking so serious. And a mob called... This is a, American mob, I think, CDC data centres. They're planning to build a 200 megawatt high density facility in Western Australia and other facilities, because this is wonderful, isn't it? It all dovetails in together. They see massive prospects for data centres because of the amount of work that AUKUS is going to provide in Western Australia. Mm. And so they're setting up these data centres to meet it. Wow. So isn't that good? And that should do wonders for the environment all over the place.
Mm. I thought Google had a policy once of doing no evil. And now they're heavily into AI.
Well, yeah, as is Deloitte, of course, as we know. We've worked that one out. But make it worse. Since
it can't get worse, Kevin.
It does. Well, when we should be kicking back, the use of black coal in Australia to power electricity has risen 2.6% since 2023. It's gone up, which when it should be going down, it's gone up.
Mm. We're headed in the wrong direction. That's that big picture, isn't it, that renewable energy is actually going up as well. It's increasing, but it's not increasing as fast as the overall use of energy.
That's the point the story makes, the very point that the overall energy, that's the
consumption.
It's increasing. It's picking up that difference, but coal is and gas.
We just keep finding ways to burn coal, don't we? We're very good at that.
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? Anyway, that's all happening, and sadly, it's not getting better. In fact, there was a separate article that pointed out that AI companies in America, almost every company now is getting into AI, but many of them don't know why. People say it's good, so they do it.
You don't need a reason to jump on the bandwagon.
No. Come on. And there they are thinking, oh, this is good, we've got all this going, but no, et cetera. But anyway.
It's when I see some of my favourite lefty authors and they'll have a picture that accompanies their article and you can tell it's an AI-drawn picture, image, and you think, oh, I wish you wouldn't.
Yeah. Who knows? These days, who knows what's what in terms of reality, isn't it? This show might be. We might be.
Yeah, are you real?
That's right.
I'll be checking in a minute to see if you're real, Kevin.
Am I real? I'm certainly reeling from all this information. But anyway, here's even better news. Antarctic's winter sea ice has hit its third lowest peak in nearly half a century of monitoring, highlighting the growing influence of climate change on the planet's southern pole. And the figure ranks as the third lowest in 47 years of records, behind the all-time low in 23 and the second lowest in 24. So you can see a pattern here. It's all happening now, but still well below the historic normal. Senior research scientist Ted Scambos at the University of Colorado said warmth from the global ocean was now mixing into the water closest to Antarctica, meaning that climate change had finally caught up with the southern continent's frozen seas. The Antarctic ice sheet holds enough land ice to raise seas high enough to inundate low-lying coastlines around the world.
Oh,
so there you are.
It does get worse.
So it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And they say because of what's happening in the Antarctic, we could be headed for another dangerous bushfire-type summer. Because the last twice Antarctic conditions were where they are now, we had really bad summers in terms of bushfires. Mm. So that's good news.
What to expect, hey?
Yeah, so it's all looking great, isn't it?
Oh, I read some good news the other day, but I don't know if you can believe
this
everything
is City
you
Limits.
Read.
Be careful.
Sorry.
What was that word? Good news.
Oh, I don't mean to stun you too much, but it was written by someone who is pro rewilding. So rewilding is this idea of especially letting landscapes that have been heavily under industrial agriculture and you introduce keystone species, and then you sit back and watch it go back to what it looked, you know, could have been like. And they were saying that all the vegetation that grows on those, what is it? It sequesters carbon to a really large, to such a large extent that she was saying if 1.6% of the world's land that's currently under agriculture was rewilded, we could get our carbon levels back to what it was in the 1940s.
Yeah.
If you can believe that.
I mean, it is out there to do it, isn't it? We know that we could, if they really took renewables seriously and seriously said we have to stop using fossils, there are all sorts of solutions out there. And there are numerous examples where, yes, land can be brought back to its original by simple means.
It's like the answers are all lying there at our feet, aren't they?
Yeah.
But the news is never going that way.
No, well, unfortunately, with economic rationalism in particular, or capitalism and economic rationalism,
those economic factors, Kevin.
Yes, well, as we said, the minister got a balance between Aboriginal heritage and economic interests, and
he's got the gift of doublespeak, doesn't he?
Oh, he's extraordinary. He was on ABC yesterday, interviewed, and there was the vital question that he wasn't asked. I can't think what it was now, but I thought, wish they'd ask him, you know, the main question. Yeah. Because he replaced Tania Plibersek to do a job, and he's doing the job. And
yes. You know, I want to see him deflect all the hard questions.
Yeah, well, he was asked about the fact that they withdrew the previous under pressure from the West Australian government and the mining industry, and he denied that was the case.
Mm.
But, of course, Albanese did back off completely.
They wanted the votes for the election.
Mm. Look, we'll take a break and we'll get Julia Stockett on the line and talk about Western Port.
All right, we'll be back in a moment.
Okay, on the line, we've got Julia Stockard from, Save Western Port. Julia, sitting there noticing your hand, you've got a short straw in your hand. You seem to have got the short straw today in terms of this interview, but here you are. Julia, there's more plans for Western Port. You've already had big fights over a number of years. This is one of those situations where the end result is good, but getting there is not so good. Is that the situation?
Yeah, it really is, Kevin. Always good to talk to you. Thank you for having an interest in this project, because it's a huge project and we know that, you know, it's so urgent for us to transition to renewable energy. But this project that is proposed in Western Port Bay is just enormous, and it will really put a lot of pressure on the marine environment, and we certainly want to make sure that the environmental assessment that is going to be happening next year really looks at all the potential impacts of having this big terminal that will roll out all of Victoria's offshore wind farms.
So, what is the proposal? Better explain it a bit to people, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a big terminal that is going to be the laydown and storage area for all these turbines and pylons coming in from overseas, unfortunately. None of this infrastructure can be manufactured in Australia, so it's all going to be coming in from overseas and stored in Western Port Bay. So this will require a lot of dredging and reclamation just to construct the terminal, because these big, they have to take the shoreline out to the dredged shipping channel to ensure that these big ships can get in. The shipping increase will be really significant. You know, in the Port of Hastings now, there's not a huge amount of shipping that goes on, but this would really increase shipping. During construction, you know, there would be a lot of activity there, but once it's operating, the barges that carry these turbines and pylons out to the offshore wind farm sites in Bass Strait, they would be operating 24/7 for years. So this is going to have huge impact.
And the pylons they use for wind farms on the ocean are enormous, aren't they? They're huge.
Yeah, we've seen a diagram of them that show that they are more than twice the height of the MCG light towers. So that's almost as tall as the Rialto Tower in Melbourne, which is huge. Mm. That's every single pylon. And I think they transport them standing up on these barges, so they would be coming and going through the bay constantly, which would really, you know, not just have impacts on the marine environment, but it would also really change the, you know, the amenity for everyone in Western Port. Phillip Island, you know, the Bass Coast, everyone. It would be visible from the land everywhere, yeah.
And, of course, if more ships come in, we know that ships can often bring in dangerous, you know, threats to the environment, which yeah. We've seen a number of places. So that again, poses a threat to the marine life of Western Port.
Yeah. The invasive marine pests are always a threat, and they're listed as one of the main threats to the Western Port Ramsar site, because Western Port was classified as a Ramsar wetland of significance to migratory birds. In 1982, it was recognised for that, which is an international accreditation. And under the Commonwealth Environmental Protection Biodiversity Conservation Act, Australia has an obligation to protect Ramsar sites. So that's a listed matter of national environmental significance under the Act. So, yeah, when the initial proposal for this project went before the Commonwealth, Tanya Plibersek rejected it outright, which I don't think that's ever happened before, that a referral or an application for a project had been, rejected before it even was assessed. So the Victorian government asked the Port of Hastings to go back to the drawing board and try and make a less invasive or less, you know, impactful project. So they've redesigned the project to be less, you know, invasive, and they've scaled down its footprint and so forth. But we don't see too many differences between the two projects. So, yeah, recently they had the scoping requirements, which is sort of, it's like the terms of reference for the environmental effects statement, which is the assessment that will happen next year. And we learnt how important this is during the AGL proposal that we fought between 2018 and 2021. The EES, environmental effects assessment for that project, we made submissions to the scoping for that project, but we didn't make sure that climate change was one of the things that would be considered. So even though thousands and thousands of people, I think there was like 6,000 or 7,000 people made submissions to that environmental effects statement, and during the hearing they gave really passionate appeals to the hearing, that none of the information or the facts about climate change could be considered because it hadn't been included in the scoping requirements. So the scoping for this EES has been out for public comment recently, and they've just released the second draft of it, and we were disappointed to see that quite a number of our suggestions that we made in our original submissions for the scoping had not been incorporated into the second draft. So we're just we're in the process of writing to Minister D'Ambrosio and the Environment Minister Simon Dimopoulos to just call on them to make sure that the EES really gets it right, to make sure that things that are so important for the assessment are included and can be considered. Because in 2018, Victoria brought in the Marine and Coastal Act, a policy which it was designed as a tool to guide environmental assessments for Victoria's marine environment. So that really lays out all the different things that are required for these assessments, but none of it was mentioned in the scoping requirements. So these policies exist, but they're not being incorporated. So that's what we're really looking at the moment. We really want to see them ensure that sustainable ecosystem-based management of any project that happens in Western Port Bay is an absolute requirement. You know, they have to look at scientific and Indigenous cultural knowledge and cumulative impacts and climate resilience of ecosystems over time. So these are all things that are recommended in the policy, and we want to make sure that they're included in this assessment.
And of course, the previous proposal, the AGL one you mentioned, was a proposal to have a gas plant on a ship in the middle of Western Port, with all the things that could happen to that, and including pouring water back into the bay. But that process is, for the community's point of view, is very costly, both financially and emotionally. And here you are, you've got to go through it again. I mean, it's quite an infringement on the whole community, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big ask to make sure that people know what's going on, first of all, and that they realise that they have an opportunity to be engaged. But, you know, it is such a sustained effort over time. These assessments take a long time. We had to do a lot of fundraising to make sure that we had legal representation and experts to scrutinise the claims that were made in the proponent's EES referral or their application. Because, of course, their experts say, they're paid to say, you know, things will be fine, there's going to be no lasting impacts or whatever. And in the case of AGL, they were saying that the cooling system for the regasification process would have required them pouring chlorinated water back into the bay constantly. And they were saying that there would be no lasting impacts from that. So we disagreed with that, and there were a lot of experts who were prepared to say that they also had concerns about that. And luckily, the Minister for Planning rejected that project. But one thing that we discovered also during that EES is that the government, well, we know the government has their own experts. They have the Office for Environmental Sustainability, they have the EPA, a whole lot of experts that they can call on. But none of them were there at the hearing in the case of the AGL EES because they hadn't been invited to appear. So it was really, it fell to community groups and NGOs like Environment Victoria, Victoria National Parks Association, and the Western Port Biosphere to counter the claims and scrutinise the reports that sort of said everything would be fine. So we want to make sure that the government's own experts have a chance to look at the proponents. In this case, the proponent is the Port of Hastings, and of course their job is to attract new development to the port in Western Port Bay. And you know, we want to support renewable energy. We do support it, but, you know, we don't think it should come at the cost of significant, globally significant ecosystems like Western Port Bay.
Yeah, it's so costly. I mean, we've argued for ages, I mentioned to you yesterday, that really in these situations the proponent should be funding the community response, really, because it costs the community so much to have to fight these things. You've usually got to get a silk to represent you at the hearing, etc., and that all costs money.
It costs a fortune, that's right. And I think in one case, there was an EES, I think, for a sand mine in eastern Victoria where the government trialled a program where they gave grants to community to, you know, cover the costs of participating in the assessment, environmental effects statement. And I don't know what became of that, but we certainly would support that. We think the proponent should really pay, or the government, because to them, to the proponent, these costs are nothing, really. The sort of money that is going into this project is huge, and that's important. I mean, we, you know, offshore wind renewables of any kind, there's a real urgency to invest in that. But yeah, we want to see it done really, really well, and make sure that the assessment really looks at the huge impacts of this project, which are really undeniable.
Yeah,
I think they're really aware of that too. They know that we're watching, and the community is really concerned about it. Yeah.
Julia, what are the alternatives to this, though? If it doesn't go ahead in Hastings, where would this work take place?
I think in other cases around the world, there's been, you know, because the terminals that are needed to roll out this level of infrastructure are so, they're so huge that they are shared across many ports. And I think that's the way it's been done, certainly in Europe. And that's a possibility here that I don't think the government really wants to look at. They're quite determined that the Port of Hastings is the location for this, but they haven't released the site selection criteria that they used to decide that the Port of Hastings in Western Port Bay was their preferred location for this project. But we know that Geelong Ports in Corio, they have done a lot of onshore wind farm shipping, has gone through Geelong, so they say they've got a site ready to go. It wouldn't require an EES, that's what they claim. But I don't think the government is looking at that. They say it doesn't have the same level of certainty for them because it's not a state-owned asset. There's also Corner Inlet, which is down along the eastern coast of Victoria, so down towards Wilson's, you know, 90-mile beach. And so forth. But that's a Ramsar wetland as well. So, you know, Victoria has got a really high-energy coastline. There's not too many sheltered ports, and that's what this sort of project really requires. But, you know, the other thing is Tasmania is also rolling out their offshore wind, and the idea of wind farms is to be sustainable. And if you're going to look at being sustainable, then why not consider ways you could avoid doubling up on infrastructure? Like if Tasmania is developing a port and Victoria is developing a port, that's all going to be doing the same sort of things in Bass Strait, then it seems like that's replicating the same sort of developments. That why couldn't that be shared? We're not convinced that Western Port Bay is the only location, and I think there are other options that still need to be considered. Yeah.
Who is the proponent, by the way?
The Port of Hastings is the proponent on behalf of the Victorian government, yeah.
Right. So, and they're representing virtually the companies that will be erecting the wind farms.
Well, the wind farm, there are many Star of the South.
Yeah, there's a number of them. Around that coast,
yeah. There's a number of them, offshore wind farm zones in Bass Strait that are already, the zones are already established, but they're going to have an auction for these offshore wind sites, I think at the end of the year or early next year, but that's been delayed, so there's a lot of uncertainty in offshore wind at the moment. But no, the Victorian government would own the terminal in Western Port Bay, so they would be, it's not going to be owned by a private company, it would be a state asset, so even though the wind farms themselves would be run by different companies, the terminal to facilitate them is a Victorian government project.
Mm. And as we've mentioned many times, every time we talk to you, in fact, Western Port is such a pristine area that it can be damaged so easily.
Yeah, there's some incredible number of species, marine species. I think Port Phillip Bay has got about 300 different species, and Western Port has over 1,300, so its diversity is, you know, really significant. Also, there are really rare, like Bryozoan reefs, which is a really ancient, incredibly ancient form of marine, I don't know what it is, whether it's a coral or an animal, but they discovered that recently, and it's really very rare. So this is what we're calling for. To be a part of this environmental assessment is for marine spatial planning to happen, because nobody has ever really looked at what is where in Western Port, what is so important to be protected, and if development is going to happen, where that should happen, if it's appropriate. So I think back in the 1970s, they said that it was urgent for this kind of mapping to happen, and now there's so many advances in terms of GPS and satellite and all of these sorts of mapping that they can do. So we think that marine spatial planning is really, it should be a no-brainer that should happen as a part of this project to work out, you know, is this appropriate, and if it could go ahead, where and what should be avoided, and all of these considerations are so important. And apparently Minister D'Ambrosio has undertaken for marine spatial planning to occur in the offshore wind farm sites, so in Bass Strait. And if that is taking place, then certainly Westernport should have the same level of assessment and attention as the offshore sites, certainly.
Yeah, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but given all the proposals that keep coming up for Westernport from AGL through other things and now this one, it would seem the government doesn't recognise the enormous asset they've got in terms of tourism and just a place where people can go and enjoy the bloody environment.
Absolutely, yeah. They I think they know, and I think during the fight against AGL, they really saw how passionate people are about Westernport Bay and how important it is. And, of course, they know that they are required under Commonwealth law to protect it. So, yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think, you know, it's just so important that they get this right. Westernport has been under pressure for years from one industrial project after the other, from a nuclear power plant to a BP super tanker to a they wanted to put in a big container terminal here and a bitumen depot. The community has been fighting projects in Westernport for decades, and we really want to see it get the sort of protection that really is called for under law. Yeah.
We'll keep in touch on this, obviously, as it progresses, but just very quickly, what's the current timeline then for where we're going with this?
So after the scoping is released, the terms of reference, then it's up to the proponent, the Port of Hastings, to do their referral, which will be thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of reports, you know, about their marine assessments, visual assessments, noise impact, lighting impacts. They have to look at every aspect of the project. They put that referral into the government and they release it for public scrutiny, and then we make submissions on it and there's a hearing, and they're saying that won't happen until the third quarter next year, but there is a lot of pressure on them because, you know, there's such urgency to get this project happening. And, you know, the government sees Westernport as an asset, but they see it as a really important asset for commerce and industry because there are so few shelter ports.
All right, Julie, look, we're out of time today, but look, thanks for your time, and it's not going to go away, so we'll talk to you again on this one in the future.
Yeah, thanks for checking in, Kevin.
Okay, thanks for your time, Julia.
All the best.
And good luck with the whole thing. Julia Stockett there from, say, Westernport, and I think we'll keep in touch on that one because the community deserves to knock them off again.
Well, thanks to all the folk out there doing all that work and writing all those submissions.
Yeah, yeah.
Thousands of submissions last
time.
Okay,
next week's housing and next minute, Joe.
All right, we'll be back next Wednesday with housing.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.